Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is a special broadcast from the Memorial Golf Tournament at the Muirfield Village Golf Club in Dublin. We're talking about what suburbs are doing to compete with the growing cachet of the Center City. The New York Times just published another story about how downtown Columbus is bigger, better, and cooler than ever. So how does a simple suburb such as Dublin compete when not just millennials are at stake, but also the bread and butter baby boomers? That's where Dublin's vision for the Bridge Street District comes in. And Terry Fogler is Dublin's former city manager. He served as the city's director of strategic initiatives and special projects since 2012. And he joins us now to talk about that. Welcome back.
Thank you for having me, Ann.
You know, we have talked about the Dublin makeover before, what Dublin's been doing. The planning started about 7 years ago in this direction. What was the trigger?
Well, I think the biggest single driver, when I came back as city manager in 2009, 2010, one of the issues that was becoming very clear was that the demographic drivers that built Dublin for 40 years were over. I mean, Dublin was 600-plus people in 1970. It's over 40,000 today. 1970 is when the first baby boomer turns 25, starts buying homes. 2010, first baby boomers start to retire, start selling off homes. So understanding that big growth in baby boom households created this incredible demand for this kind of housing was ending, and trying to understand the demographics moving forward caused us to take a fresh look at what Dublin's future needed to be.
Right, because the millennials coming up, they're not necessarily interested in the same sort of layout that the baby boomers were.
Yeah, I think there's the preference piece of it, and that's right. Real important on that. But just think of this in terms of core demographics. Over 80% of the growth in households for decades to come is one- and two-person households without kids. That's not the last 40 years. If 80-plus percent of the growth in households in Central Ohio and nationally is one- and two-persons without kids, it's not going to be four-bedroom homes on increasingly less dense lots pushing farther and farther out. That housing is going to be something very, very different. So the demographic household characteristics themselves will change it. But then you get to the issue of preferences and millennials. And the reason that gets so important is that we've had folks, Carol Coletta and others, come to Dublin and speak to this issue of one of the most important predictors of economic competitiveness is your ability to attract and retain talent. And I think it's at the top. The mobile part of talent are the millennials. And actually the young millennials on that, when you're getting into those 25 to 30, that's the mobile part. So if attracting and retaining talent for the 70,000 people that work in Dublin is critical for its long-term competitiveness, what are they seeking in the way of environments, workplaces, places to live, places to eat? Dublin didn't have those on there. So our own economic self-interest for long-term economic competitiveness suggested that need. The other side of that is Dublin is aging. All those baby boomers who are now, you know, nationally turning 65 at the rate of 10,000 a day are seeking something different. I'm one of those in a four-bedroom home. My kids are all grown. Mm-hmm. I'm wanting an environment that probably more aligns with what those millennials are looking for in terms of more compact, a smaller unit, less to take care of, more walkable, mixed mm-hmm. use, eating options, parks and stuff that are nearby, a little more vibrancy to it, aligns with that group as well, so that 80-plus percent growth of one- and two-person households is overwhelmingly empty nesters. That's the big growth segment. And the secondary piece is the millennials. That's what's going to drive the housing markets going forward for decades, 10, 20, 30, 40 years going forward. How do we compete, maintain the value of what we have in Dublin, and add this next layer?
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. It's a special broadcast from the Memorial Golf Tournament at the Muirfield Village Golf Club in Dublin. We're talking about how suburbs are adapting to the new demands of a changing demographic when it comes to housing and where people want to work and eat and take their entertainment. My guest is Terry Fogler. He's Dublin's former city manager and has served as the city's director of strategic initiatives and special projects since 2012. If you have a question or a comment, you live in Dublin, you see the changes, what do you think? You live in another suburb, you're seeing changes there. Give us a call, tell us what you think. 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org, or check out our Facebook page and call your, leave a message, leave your question there if you want. So you still have this stock of housing out there that is beautiful and well-built, much of it, very highly desirable to a certain segment, but how are you going to fill all that up over time? What is that? What happens?
Well, that's one of the big challenges that we raised in 2010. We shared some studies. There's some demographers around the country who have kind of looked at this issue. And if you go back, like I said, those last 40 years, the vast majority of the growth was in that 25 to 65-year-old segment. That's folks who buy homes. If you project it out the next 10, 20, 30 years, 75% of the growth in households is net sellers of homes, 65 and older. So the ratio between buyers and sellers is changing dramatically. Yeah. How do you protect value? How do you preserve the desirability and the value of what's here? Dublin will be predominantly a single-family detached suburban community. That won't change. But if you can add to it a vibrant, mixed-use, walkable core, that's an amenity that adds value to everything, not just responding to those new demographics for new housing types, but folks in Dublin, I think, love the idea of a riverfront park and restaurants and walkability and events in their city heart and center going forward. That adds value and differentiates it, creates value to the single-family housing, where the underlying long-term demographics aren't good for preserving the value like, or growing the value like it did in the past.
People in Dublin, how are they responding to this?
We in Dublin have do surveys of our residents every couple of years, very detailed surveys to kind of monitor. Do you have a good understanding? The really good news, I think, since this thing started in 2010, is that every time we've done that survey, the awareness and knowledge has grown dramatically to where I think it was nearly 80% of the population said very familiar with the Bridge Street District. And to the extent folks are familiar, they are supportive. So we're getting percentages in that 80% range who are very or somewhat supportive of the initiative on there. So I think that Dublin has been engaged in this planning process since the beginning, kind of understands what it's been about. We've been blessed also that Bridge Street District doesn't have a lot of single-family neighborhoods in it.
Right.
It's got 275, Sawmill, kind of 161. So you don't have a lot of the normal kind of tensions of this stuff that butts up against a lot of existing single-family. But that also is kind of where our core is, and that's where some of the redevelopment opportunities exist. That's where this very underutilized river is located, and folks are really looking forward to the riverfront parks that serve the area. But even the notions of more restaurants, housing options, place for kids to live as they grow, place for seniors to live as they retire and sell their homes, I think all has great appeal to the community. The economic development side has been very strongly appealed to by the corporations.
Right.
We are pretty much suburban office park is the only product we have. And you can see a lot of the companies that increasingly are looking for urban locations. Part of that's talent attraction and retention. We need to add that layer as well. We think that adds value to the office product that we've got, but more importantly, even adds a whole new layer and type of office product that is urban and walkable and in these mixed-use environments that will be attractive to the workers who want to work in those environments as well.
Were you at all inspired by what was going on downtown 15 years ago when they turned their sights on the river and started making plans for that?
Yeah, I think that principle and that concept, I mean, my first introduction to this kind of stuff was really when I headed up Campus Partners in the 1990s. And if you saw High Street, then they were tearing down buildings and putting up Wendy's and drive-thrus and putting suburban stuff in the middle of this urban neighborhood there. And obviously that didn't make sense. And now you see kind of the whole short north end of the University District, what's kind of occurring there. But to have an amenity like a river that effectively you couldn't even see when you were driving down either side of the river in Dublin, had no access to it to speak of along that area, and it's a gorgeous stretch of river there, is a phenomenal public space and amenity that can create value, encourage investment going forward. And I think the 2.5 million square feet of private development that's now in the pipeline and occurring there because of the kind of value that's being created in that core is testament to the power of those kind of public spaces and parks.
You said in a Columbus CEO article that you expect the pace of development to pick up as the Bridge Street Park moves forward towards its first openings in 2017. And then you said that you were starting to attract the critical mass of uses. And I'm wondering what that means. What do you mean by critical mass? And what are you talking about there?
Well, in dense urban mixed-use environments, one of the biggest challenges is I can pluck down a building and I can put a bunch of apartments above it and a little bit of retail. What makes dense, walkable spaces work is the more of that density, the more of that diversity of uses, the more of the housing, it creates more markets for more restaurants. It creates more vibrancy, more activity. When we brought Chris Leinberger in to kind of speak in Dublin, it's this notion of kind of more is better. So you have to have enough destination stuff to be there. You have to have enough housing that creates people on the streets at night. You have to have enough office development to kind of create that worker class during the day. You'd like to have hotels and conference facilities that feed a whole different level of market and demand that can serve restaurants and stuff. So getting to a critical mass at a fairly reasonable rate is important. You couldn't come in and put in a 100,000 square foot building and wonder why it's not vibrant and walkable and active all the time. It just doesn't have the critical mass of stuff, which is why places like the Short North, that as they occur and build more and more critical mass, the competition for kind of what's left, because the vibrancy is so strong, mm-hmm. only gets greater. So that former Wendy or former White Castle sites that were okay as White Castles for years then can support something much different, because the density and the critical mass there and the available supply is so limited that it really creates value.
How do you balance the growth that you're talking about and the development, this kind of urban-esque development along the river, which sounds wonderful? How do you balance that with the increased population? Mm-hmm. How are the roads being reconfigured? Mm-hmm. How are you doing that so it doesn't feel like you're getting off an interstate highway to jump to a restaurant?
Yep. Then that's an important piece. One of the things that Dublin did when it started this process was to say, okay, here's an idea, here's a vision, let's test it. Let's bring in Nelson Nygaard, best folks in the country who are analyzing these kinds of transportation environments, and help us figure out, will it work? Does it function? What's the impact on the existing transportation system? We did that with transportation, we did it with sewer, we did it with water, we did it with stormwater, all the infrastructure and utilities to say, can it handle it? And the great thing about building a grid, just as you see around the Short North, these other neighborhoods, It gives traffic lots of ways to get in and out on that. So right now, as this project is moving forward, you're seeing a complete urban grid of streets that will allow traffic to disperse in lots of different ways, mm-hmm. and that's one of the solutions. The other is, the more of those trips you can capture internally, Nelson Nygaard, for example, in Bridge Street District, which is 1,000 acres, If I get a grocery in Bridge Street and restaurants in Bridge Street and a coffee shop in Bridge Street, I'm not leaving Bridge Street. I'm able to get so many, and I work in Bridge Street because there's office there. Nelson Nygaard projects that if this plan moves forward as we have planned, and it is, that we should capture 40% of the trips within Bridge Street. That's stuff that doesn't go out to the arterial system and kind of load. That creates much more walkability, local trips, internal trips, and that's one of the real benefits of that kind of dense mixed-use environment.
To what extent are you looking to attract people from outside of Dublin?
I think this will attract folks who today...
To visit Dublin.
Well, to visit, okay.
You know, like I live in Worthington. Yep. Am I going to shoot over to Dublin for dinner?
I think you would, just as you would go to any other great place that has a lot of restaurants and walkability to it. Restaurants, when you talk to the folks even looking at hotels and restaurant locations today, you'll hear them say, I want walkability. I want something around it. That really helps our business go forward. We've had analysts and folks like Rob come in who kind of say, if you're not looking at those elements being part of your projects, they're probably obsolete before they're built. Mm. So if I plop a multifamily project out in a cornfield, or if I stick a hotel over here that you have to drive to, there's nothing around it, it's at a disadvantage going forward.
Are you doing focus groups with younger people to see what they think about what you're planning?
That was very much a part of all the initial planning and continues to be, even with the developers moving forward. So did it with folks that worked in Dublin that were in the younger millennials, saying, if this kind of product was here, might you choose to live in Dublin? And The response was overwhelmingly positive. If those options existed on there, they would. I think it just adds to the diversity. I think the downtown and everything happening around the urban core is great and strengthens the region. I think what you're going to see is more suburban models of this, largely driven by those demographics we talked at the beginning.
Right.
Because the housing will be different and probably more compact regardless.
Do you see people approaching housing differently? I mean, do you see more sort of Golden Girl-esque situations where why not? Why should somebody move out of a house when they could share it with two other people?
Yeah. And I think that it's interesting. And I think your market analyst later here can speak more specifically to the demand studies. But I also I chair the Columbus Urban Land Institute's District Council here, and we've been working with MORPSI on this Insight 2050.
Yeah.
And it really has implications for how this region grows, and they're doing stuff now on the elderly and kind of looking at what some of those options are, because it is so dominated by the aging baby boomer as the major, that's the growth segment that's different. Everything else is relatively close. The segments that are much, much bigger than they are today is that aging baby boomer segment. So I think implications for housing, for transit, for service delivery, for all kinds of things is going to cause cities like Dublin to look at this stuff differently. Most community plans and zoning codes tend to extrapolate past trends. And if you extrapolate past trends and say Dublin and the region are going to grow like they've grown the last 40 years, what Insight 2050 said was you'll consume close to 500 square miles. You'll consume a county. Well, the good news is the demographics say that can't happen anyway because it's not primarily about households with kids as the growth segment. It's a different kind of household. We know it's going to be smaller. We know it's going to be more compact. So all these new living arrangements, zoning codes that kind of affect how folks live and how many units you can have and how many families can live in areas and could garages be converted. Yeah. I think you're going to see lots of discussions about those issues moving forward because housing this aging segment, plus the affordability of housing for low-income families, which is even a bigger challenge moving forward, are going to cause us to look at these things in totally new ways.
Well, Terry Fogler, thanks for joining us again to talk about it. I appreciate your time today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
That's Terry Fogler. He's former city manager for the city of Dublin. He's also now serves as the city's director of strategic initiatives and special projects since 2012. We're talking about how suburbs are trying to keep up with the Joneses. That means the urban centers now, which are becoming more populated and more popular. More All Sides with Ann Fisher coming up. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. This is a special live broadcast from the Memorial Golf Tournament at the Muirfield Village Golf Club in Dublin. We're talking about how suburbs are competing with the growing cachet of the central cities. They're looking for better access to entertainment and services and that urban vibe. Joining us now is president of Helpbringer Mortgage Services, Todd Helpbringer. Welcome back.
Thank you very much.
Also, Rob Vogt of Vogt Strategic Insights, a real estate research firm. Welcome back, Rob.
Good morning.
If anyone has a question or comment, we'd love to hear from people in the suburbs. What do you think they need to do to pick up the pace, keep up with the pace of development in downtown Columbus, for instance, made the New York Times once again for its vibrancy, et cetera, et cetera. You know, Dublin isn't alone. You know, Worthington has added apartment living to its Worthington Square mall layout with more restaurants, you know, dry cleaners, grocery stores, all that kind of stuff. The Evans Farm Project on Lewis Center Road in Delaware County wants to do that and also had a trout stream, a small farm and a retirement community. They're really getting kind of interesting there. They're calling this a town center for Orange Township, and they're looking to build an identity, right? Isn't that kind of part of what this is all about, Rob Vogt?
Exactly. And in fact, it's interesting that we're sitting here at Muirfield Village, and that was really kind of the developments that they did previously around a golf course like this. And I think now that developers have recognized that that's not really what folks are looking for anymore. They don't want to be necessarily in that golf course environment. And so we're going to see more and more of these types of concepts that are going to capitalize on kind of a town center concept, offering mixed uses, walkable communities. And I don't think we're going to see many of the traditional subdivisions that we saw that were built in the 70s and 80s that responded to all those baby boomers out there.
You know, Todd Helpbringer, Terry Fogler talked about how the development along the river and stuff is adding value to all of these big houses along the golf course because it's, you know, people want to live at least near it. Yes. It from where you sit, you know, is that the sort of thing that they need to do besides just keep up the property?
Well, I think definitely keep up the property is key no matter what you do. We're just seeing overall values are going up right now. It's interest rates are low. I think, and we talked about this earlier, there's not much product on the market. And I think with less product, a lot of people are bidding up these values. And so I'd be careful that value is going up too far too fast. But I think with limited product, we probably won't get into that. But I think having the walkable communities and then outskirts with more homes is going to be a vibrant for everybody.
Yeah, it's good. And as far as the urban areas go, they're not losing anything by not having the sprawling golf courses, right?
No, quite the contrary. I think, Ann, it's a totally different environment than what you offered up here. You know, you have the wide open green spaces, right. the fairways, the beautiful vistas. But what a lot of the millennials are after today is that urban walkable environment. The fact they want to walk down the street and go to a coffee shop and go to an art gallery and go to events and go to the parks. It's really interesting to watch how this has evolved over the past 20 years in terms of consumers' preferences, both on the residential side and what they're looking for in a place to live.
So what's going to happen then to the suburbs as they are and where they sit? I was talking to Terry Fogle earlier and said, what about a Golden Girls sort of scenario? Do you see baby boomers teaming up like that?
You know, I don't see it yet. I don't see that happening yet.
Not yet.
No, I still think there's always going to be a need for someone that wants a yard, someone that wants that space. Not everyone wants to have the concrete, inside their, down their elevator to their, destination. People still like having a yard and the feeling. So it may flip-flop where the older folk maybe go down to these walkable communities, and some of the youngers, as they have children, will still go back to the suburbs.
Yeah.
It does flip-flop a little bit.
Yeah.
But, Ann, it's important to look at the long-term demographics, and I think that's one of the points that Terry was making, is that we've got this incredible chunk of baby boomers who are aging in place. It is now the second-largest generation behind the millennials. But if you look at that intermediate generation, the Gen X, the folks that are in the 40 to 55-year-old age group, it's a much smaller generation, and that's your move-up buyer. That's the folks that are going to occupy many of the big houses that we have.
But it's a smaller number.
So not only do you have the Gen X, it's a smaller generation to move into these houses, you also had a lot of the Gen X households who got burned by the recession.
Yeah.
They took on more house than they could afford. The house is underwater. So it's even harder for them to sell that house. So we're going to lose a lot of folks moving up to buy those suburban houses, which means we're going to have a lot of product on the market, certainly not tomorrow or even next year, but 8 or 10 years from now, we're going to have a real challenge on what we do with many of these suburban tract houses.
I think as long as I don't believe in the big mega houses anymore. I think above 4,000 square feet are probably going to fall off because a lot of people don't want to pay for that or upkeep on that. But I think as long as people continue to upkeep their house, I think there's always that need for that product. But I do understand what you're saying.
I think one of the things, too, that we'll see is more emerging businesses that can take care of that house for an older homeowner.
Right.
We always talk about, what are we going to do when we can't navigate the stairs or how to clean out the gutters and so on. Mm-hmm. We'll see more and more of those services out there that takes care of that problem. So maybe the emerging technology will address it, but the long-term demographics really suggest that we're going to have more housing, big housing in the suburbs than we can actually use.
Mm-hmm.
And so creating some of those, finding solutions for the use of those houses is going to be key, and one of those things might be house sharing.
Yeah.
Where you...
They want the lifestyle, but they can't afford it or they can't handle it on their own.
We don't see as many new builds right now at all.
Yeah.
I mean, this is kind of the season where it really takes off. We don't see many starts at all with the new builds.
Yeah.
It's like that's what's slowing down.
But doesn't some of that, Todd, have to do with the cost of housing? The cost to build new housing today is so exorbitant, which is one of the reasons you don't see entry-level housing as much anymore.
Right.
I mean, an entry-level house today is, what, $300,000 anymore?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not all the young people can afford a $300,000 house.
Exactly. Or a lot of the people that I might work with, I tell them, don't live for the house. It used to be back years ago, people would say, stretch for your first house. Who wants to stretch and live for your home? There's some other things people want to do, so they don't do that as often.
No question. That's right. Lifestyle has a lot to do with
it. It has changed tremendously.
Yeah.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. This is a special live broadcast from the Memorial Golf Tournament at the Muirfield Village Golf Club in Dublin. It's a beautiful day out here. We're talking about how the suburbs are adapting to the changing demographics and the changing preferences of homeowners and residents. My guest, Rob Vogt, he's a real estate analyst at Vogt Strategic Insights, and also Todd Helpbringer, president of Helpbringer Mortgage Services. If you have a question or comment, want to talk about where you live in the suburbs and what you think about what's going on, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Heather in Dublin, you're on the air. Hi, Heather.
Hi, Ann. I was just calling because I live in Dublin, right off of High Street in the area where the Bridge Street District is being built. and I'm actually moving because of all the construction is tearing down all the trees along the river, which was the reason I moved there in the first place. But I'm really priced out of being able to buy in Dublin, and it really makes me sad that I'm moving to the other side of the city because I can't afford to live there anymore. And I've so enjoyed being able to walk to the library and all the little restaurants there in downtown Dublin. But I'm finding myself, because of the great things that are going on, in a position to not be able to stay anymore.
Yeah, it's Heather, thank you so much for your call, because Rob Vogt, it's a calculated risk. There's a margin of people that are going to go the route that Heather's gone.
Absolutely. And as I mentioned, it's so difficult for developers today to just carve out a cornfield site, right, and offer an entry-level house or a moderate-priced house. Everything now is being priced here in Dublin well above $400,000, unless you want to go into maybe a condominium or attached home situation. So I'm not surprised by a person like that who's stuck, where do I go in Dublin, and, right, and there's no alternative.
You said earlier it's the lower income, the more moderate income, that is the biggest concern,
yeah,
at this point.
That's right.
Yeah. And Todd, I mean, what do you tell people?
Well, I mean, there's always opportunity for financing. I look at their situation and see, but I think a lot of people, though, just our price point of home is still $250,000. That's probably where our sweet spot is. And there's still a lot of people buying, but they get in the threes and fours. Yeah, it just
drops down
tremendously. Mm. That's our sweet spot.
Heather, thanks a lot for that call. We appreciate it. If anyone else has a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org or check out our Facebook page and post a comment or a question there. We're talking about suburbs and how they're keeping up with the downtown areas now. I mean, really, it's just such a total flip-flop in the conversations I was having 15, 20 years ago as a journalist,
right,
about you know, how the downtowns were just grappling.
How fast can I get out of downtown? Because it has got all kinds of problems with,
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
And that's when we saw.
That was beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It really is. It's absolutely beautiful. What do you predict for what they're doing in Dublin, though, Todd Hellbrenner?
I think the same thing.
The river?
If they do plan properly, it's going to be beautiful. The same thing with what's going to happen in Lewis Center. Just plan properly, take your time, and it's going to be fantastic. I worry about sometimes the growth too far, too fast.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about that before. Sometimes the incentive to have businesses come or to build more buildings, sometimes that's almost a catch-22, because,
yeah,
then we're robbing Peter to pay Paul and other different communities that suffer. I mean, Rob and I have talked about that.
Yeah, but I think the other important piece of this, Anne, is to be able to provide a housing choice for residents in Dublin that isn't readily available. And even though that caller earlier sounds like she's fairly younger and probably looking for a good suburban school district, we got to have choices for older adults. And older adults want to stay in the community. They want to live the community. They want to experience all the great things that happen here in Dublin. So a project like Bridge Street provides that alternative for them.
Right.
And I think we're not only going to see it here in Dublin, but I think we're going to see it in a number of different suburban communities. And I've mentioned it to you in the past, places like Groveport, Hilliard, Old Westerville,
yeah,
Gahanna. They have all great downtowns that have this density that's going to begin to attract other housing choices, alternatives for this giant group of baby boomers that needs a maintenance-free lifestyle, a maintenance-free housing choice.
Cindy in New Albany, you're on the air. Hi, Cindy.
Hi. This is something that fascinated me for a long time, but now as a baby boomer and at 67 and my husband in his 70s, we moved to Columbus, and we're looking around for where do we want to end up. And one of the communities, Westerville, to me is a place that there's all different economic levels. There's a college, there's education, there's classes, there's restaurants. And this is some place that is definitely of interest to us. We also are fascinated by the small and tiny home movement. You know, and so that's something we're looking into. So the in Dublin, it sounds very interesting. I hope, though, that it isn't all just bright, shiny, new, and all one income level, that it's just like a Disneyland rather than like a real living community.
Yeah.
You know, that's one of the that's one of the challenges today, Anne, is how do we develop housing that's affordable in many of these mixed-use situations. The fact is that the cost of land, cost of construction, financing, yep, is so
way
high
up
today that developers can only charge one price, and that's high.
But you can develop with lots of different sizes in mind.
Oh, sure. Right. Absolutely. But when you're talking about $2 a foot rents, mm-hmm. you know, even a 500 square foot apartment is going to rent for over $1,000 a month.
Right.
Not a lot of folks in the moderate level can afford those kinds of rents. And when you're talking about choices, it's going to be at the upper end. So we've got to develop some strategies in housing that addresses sort of the middle class and the lower middle class and give them some of those choices. And that's certainly one of the upcoming issues. I know that, and I hate to bring up Columbus Metropolitan Housing, but they're struggling now with how do we provide affordable housing choices mm-hmm. in a place like Dublin or Westerville, where you do have a lot of retail service jobs, and this is where the
job... not great transportation
right.
options.
So when you talk about a mixed-use development like the Bridge Street Project, yep. Nobody who works there can afford the rents they're going to have to charge. So that's going to be one of the challenges on how we can develop affordable housing for lower-income residents.
Have you noticed that development along at Bethel and Linworth that went up there, apartments? And some of them are really tiny apartments, but they have a garage, and the apartment's right above the garage. But there's all different size apartments, I noticed,
right.
in that development.
Right, right.
So all different kinds of people could live there.
And that focuses on that, the caller talked about the smaller home
yeah.
movement. We are seeing units becoming smaller and smaller. It would be great if we had a development locally that actually built an 800 or 900 or 1,000 square foot unit, detached unit, or even attached unit for sale,
right.
and see if we could actually accomplish that. That's one way to try to bring that cost down. And I think a lot of younger people today, especially with the smaller households, are willing to live in a smaller space.
Right.
They don't need 2,200 square feet where they only live in one room, the kitchen.
Yeah.
The kitchen, the family room, and that's
right.
it.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Hey, Cindy in New Albany, thanks for that call. We appreciate it. Email from Autumn. She says, I live in Dublin, and I can appreciate the change this new infrastructure will bring, but I feel it is greatly at odds with the city of Columbus. So let's talk about that. I didn't get the sense from Terry Fogler that they're trying to compete with Columbus per se, but that it's good for the whole region.
I agree with that. I mean, everyone is not competing against each other. They're just, okay, Columbus is going to be its own entity. Dublin, the Powell's going to do something. I mean, Hillier did something. Westerville. I mean, they all have different components.
Right.
I don't think either of them are alike either.
No.
They all bring
something
different.
Yeah. I don't think it competes either. It's a complement to what we offer in the urban and neighborhoods in Columbus, because there are that component that would like to be downtown but doesn't want to really live through all the issues of downtown, right. the perception of crime, the trash, the people on the streets, the traffic. So when you have a development like this here in Dublin, you know, you can capture that component that would really like an urban neighborhood but doesn't want all the problems that the Short North might have or downtown Columbus has.
Nicole in Upper Arlington, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I would like to know a little bit about the tax situation. We live in Upper Arlington, and I really admire how progressive the development in Dublin has been. It really works out for us with three kids that you're basically developing a whole city up there. And we come up there a lot, but the taxes on the houses are kind of an impediment for us. In the price range that we're looking at, the taxes just seem a little bit nuts, even though the services are wonderful. I'm curious, is that going to change? Since there are so many more businesses being lured in, I'd love to know a little bit more about whether that's even an issue as everything develops.
Well, okay, Nicole, thanks a lot for that call. Yeah, Rob, I mean, there is an effort to offset some of that with more business tax.
Right, but I don't think it's going to be, I don't think there'll be a change in the property tax situation.
Right.
They have a budget that they have to meet, and there's an expectation to...
Well,
to,
Upper Arlington isn't exactly chopped right. liver either, you know? I mean, it can't be cheap to
right.
live there.
Right,
but you get what, that's the high rent district. That's what you're going to get.
Right.
You get the
right.
better services, and it kind of is what it is.
That's right.
Right. Unfortunately.
All right. If anyone else has a question or comment, we're talking about how the suburbs are keeping up with the downtowns these days. If you have a question, 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. It is a special live broadcast today from the Memorial Golf Tournament at the Muirfield Village Golf Club in Dublin. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Dan Fisher. This is a special live broadcast from the Memorial Golf Tournament at the Muirfield Village Golf Club in Dublin. We're talking about how suburbs are competing with the growing cachet of the center city, the inner city. They are looking for better access to entertainment and services and that urban vibe. Still with us is President of Helpbringer Mortgage Services, Todd Helpbringer, and also Rob Vogt of Vogt Strategic Insights. That's a real estate research firm. Welcome back to you both.
Thank you.
If anyone has a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Let's talk about the schools and how much that really matters and how that plays into the equation of taxes. Rob Vogt, it's a big issue.
Yeah, it really is. And you know, and we work on a lot of developments around Central Ohio, multifamily developments. And I think a lot of suburban communities have a perception that these apartment projects generate a lot of kids without paying their proportionate share of the taxes that support the schools. And that's really a misconception, that they don't generate a lot of kids. They generate kids who are preschool typically, but they don't generate a lot of school age. I mean, you really, really don't want your 8-year-old growing up in a 250-unit apartment project, you know, with a with an adult swimming pool nearby.
Exactly. Right.
So there's this misconception that they generate a lot of school-age children. They really don't. So they're paying taxes, they're supporting the schools, and they don't generate any kids. So it's a great complement to the community to have this alternative. The other point is that and we talked about, the baby boomers getting older and older, to have that choice within the community, they're not going to be using the schools, but they're going to be paying the taxes through the rent that they pay. So it's a win-win situation, to use, I guess, the term that's pretty popular right now, to have apartments in these communities and attract who they attract.
Yeah.
I agree 100%. I just wonder, this is probably a sensitive subject, but the tax abatement, though, don't these companies have tax abatements for many years?
Oh, I don't think Dublin granted any tax abatements
on
the project. So
not at all. That's always been
some
my
places.
Yes,
that's been the case, not Dublin.
Well, it's certainly a hot issue downtown right now. Is the tax abatement question, and I imagine that debate may be going on for some time.
Chris in Dublin, you're on the air. Hi, Chris.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Just had a quick question. I actually live in the old sawmill area, kind of off sawmill, and I was kind of wondering how it's going to affect that area, if they're both short-term and long-term. I mean, is it going to have a big impact, or will it be a minimal impact on, you know, the housing crisis there?
You're talking about the development along the river? Okay.
Yeah. I was talking about how the Prince Street project will affect, like, old sawmill and, you know, some of those housing communities, and if it will affect the home prices there that much. I'll take my answer off here, though. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Chris.
You know, and I think it's actually going to be a compliment. I mean, when you have that kind of entertainment district, which really the Bridge Street project will be, it'll be an entertainment district. It'll have dining. It'll have coffee shops. It'll have small shops. It would actually enhance, I think, the value of a home like that, because you have that choice, a walkable choice, that much closer. So I think that's a very positive thing for area homeowners.
Yeah.
Even if it's not walkable, it's, again, closer, more opportunity, more different things to try. Absolutely.
Right. Okay.
As the dust settles, I mean, give it a couple of years. Let things kind of pan out, see how everything works out. I think there'll be improvements.
Vicki in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Vicki.
Hi. I don't care whether it's moving across town or to a different town, or whether it's an apartment or a home. I think a good thing to do before moving is a personal assessment in terms of, okay, what kinds of foods do we normally eat? Do we use the library a lot? Do I need easy access to a bookstore, to a pharmacy? And when looking at an area, people need to go into the local grocery store. Does this store, because the grocery store stocks by demographics of the area, and so go visit the grocery store. Does it have the kinds of foods that I normally eat, including a lot of ethnic foods? Because they don't have a bunch of ethnic foods. There's not. That speaks to the demographics of the area. And the same thing with the bookstore, the library. Is it a literary kind of area? Are people reading? If I have a lot of medicines I need, or doctors, is that around there? I don't think people usually make
enough effort to really check out those kinds of things that fit into your lifestyle when they're looking at an area.
Interesting.
Well, Todd, you could probably address this. So many times people buy a house and it's that emotional choice that they make immediately. Right. They fall in love with the house without really considering the surrounding environment. But I think what the important thing that caller has pointed out is the fact that 20 years ago, we'd get in a car and drive 20 miles to go to a grocery store. I mean, I remember living near downtown and having to drive to the Cub Food out on the east side.
Yeah.
And we didn't think a second about it. But now today, people are weighing what are some of those amenities that are close by that's going to enhance their lifestyle.
So. Plus, even if it's a little further away, Columbus is such a small but big city.
I agree.
You can get anywhere quickly, and there's a lot of different opportunities. And I mean, maybe not in your immediate neighborhood, but my gosh, you could be anywhere you want in probably 20 minutes.
Even in your electric car?
My bicycle.
Vicki, thanks a lot for that call. We appreciate it. Jim in Clintonville, you're on the air. Hi, Jim.
Hi, can you hear me okay on the speakerphone?
I can.
Okay, good. Yeah, I'm from Denver, but I lived in Columbus for about 8 years. I worked at Kim Abstract for several years. I'm back visiting friends, and as I was listening to your program, I was just struck by that this feels like it's going to be a very sort of economically and to some extent racially segregated area. I've read some articles that Columbus is one of the most segregated northern cities in the country. And so I'm wondering what you folks might be doing to encourage a little more diversity and opportunities for, you know, minorities and people of color to be able to afford to live in a place like Dublin. And is Dublin doing anything to try to encourage more diversity in their community? I mean, this is a pretty upscale area of Dublin and Muirfield and, you know, PGA golf course.
Well, we talked about earlier about moderate and lower income households and giving them housing choices. And frankly, new construction can't get it done for the most part. It just simply doesn't make any economic sense.
They can't do it cheaply enough.
But there are some programs. The low-income housing tax credit program is an example that can be a vehicle that could be used to develop more affordable housing. And the Ohio Housing Finance Agency, which controls the tax credits in Ohio, is making efforts to make affordable housing available in some of these suburban communities. So it's going to have to be a public-private partnership to make that work in any big numbers. The other point that I'd like to make, at least about affordable housing, is the fact that even though we've had all these high-end apartments developed across our city, there's a huge stock of lower quality, lower cost apartments along the 161 corridor, Morris Road corridor, Sawmill. They have a huge number of affordable housing choices that may not have all the glitz of a high-end downtown property, but the rent is affordable for the most part.
It's on a bus line.
It's close to employment centers. And, you know, like I said, you may not have brand new carpet or brand new paint, but it is an affordable alternative in a suburban location.
And again, you're still close enough. If you want to get someplace, you could be there in 10, 15 minutes. If, you know, that Sawmill area over to the Dublin, 10, 15 minutes. So I agree. There's a lot of areas like that.
Jim, thank you for that call. Appreciate it. Now, I wanted to talk a little bit about mortgage rates and what they mean. I mean, you made the point that the housing stock can only be so it is costly because anything new is costly now. But the mortgage rates are so stinking low still. They dropped again in May, which was weird. That's yet another incentive for buyers, right? But you can't buy if there isn't any stock. So why the shortage?
And that's what we're faced with right now. As you mentioned, rates are fantastic. We're at 3 5/8 on a 30-year fixed. So fantastic interest rates. The problem is that a lot of realtors I talk to, there's very little product out there right now. And the product that's on the market, it's going to be gobbled up within a couple of days and probably have multiple offers and then bidding the house up $10,000 to $15,000 above ask.
Yeah.
So a lot of times we're getting to the issue of, is the market stable enough to support that value? And if not, then the borrower's going to have to bring more money to make up the shortfall there. So again, it's just going to take some time. We'll establish a new baseline. But again, I'm always cautious as home prices go up 10%, 15%. We're going to get to the same issue that we're having with the housing, whereas we're going to be pricing people out because rates eventually are going to go up. They've been wanting rates to go up for years.
You've been telling me that since 2008.
One of these days I'm going to be right. But honestly, I don't want them to go up. Too many great things happen when rates are low. But everyone wants to raise rates. I mean, they're going to do it. They're thinking they're going to do it now in June. But again, the last rate increase we had, the Fed's raised in December, the 10-year bond market decreased,
right,
which was great for mortgage interest rates. So who knows what they're going to figure out. But I go back to the same thing, is that just don't want to price a bunch of people out as home values go up too far, too fast.
Right. I read phrases like sky high to describe the Central Ohio home market, right? And I wonder, is this a bubble? Because that reminds me of the last one.
It could be, but I think it's too early to tell. I think with the limited amount of product on the market, I don't think we're going to hit that bubble. It just, there's not that, there's a lot of sales going through, but if there was tons of product on the market and prices were going up 15 and 20%, yeah, we got a problem. We almost need to slow it down a little bit. But I don't really see that.
You know, the market research side of me tells me that even though we have the lowest interest rates in near history, people aren't that interested in buying right now. And again, it's because lifestyle, the number of one-person households that typically don't buy a house,
Recovering from the recession,
The student debt that they took on. So there's a number of factors that, even though we have some of the lowest interest rates, tells me that there's not this huge demand for at least some component of the housing market. We've talked about this in the past, Todd, that where you're seeing the appreciation in prices are the desirable areas like Dublin, like Worthington, Arlington, Bexley. These are all places that people want to live,
right,
and are bidding at the, for a very limited amount of product, quite frankly.
Absolutely.
Elliot in Upper Arlington, you're on the air. Hi, Elliot.
Hi. Well, I don't know too much about the low-income housing, so in the part of Central Upper Arlington where I live, there seem to be a lot of duplexes and quadplexes, single stories. I don't know what the rental is on them, but they're here. But I know that there are quite a number of small houses under 1,100 square feet in our area that I've looked at the real estate things, and they're going for around $250,000. And I just think Upper Arlington is a great place to live, especially now as they're developing the Tremont Road area into a sort of a downtown. And then there's the Lane Avenue area as well. Good restaurants, excellent library, good community stuff, wonderful schools. So hurrah for Upper Arlington.
But still, I mean, oops, sorry about that. I just dropped you up here. Apologize. That's still a high price to pay for an 1,100 square foot house,
right,
unless, you know, if you're struggling, if you're lower income.
Was that a call from the Chamber of Commerce?
Yeah. It was Elliot from Upper.
Funny.
It was a good sell job, Elliot, by the way.
But it's those older inner communities like Bexley, like Arlington, that have those kinds of established amenities that are so desirable to families. Great school districts, great support systems, libraries, swimming pools.
And they're bringing more amenities in there.
And they're keep, right. Bam. Yeah,
I agree.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it a great time to live here, though? I mean, all this going on right now.
With the tournament?
Just no rain.
No rain, the tournament, but just what Dublin's going through in Westville. I mean, it's beautiful.
It is fun to watch.
The downtown.
We've waited for this for so long.
Yeah.
I mean, downtown, you go down. We were down this past weekend. It was still booming.
Yeah, we'll be out there for the art festival. I think it's next week.
Yeah.
And really looking forward to it with the green area and everything.
But it does bring to point that 20 years ago, we would not be sitting here talking about a multifamily development in Dublin on Bridge Street.
Absolutely.
And lifestyles have changed, interests have changed, housing choices, preferences have changed. And this is really, I think, only the tip of the iceberg in terms of what we're going to see. Creekside and Gahanna is going to, I think, become very successful in spite of the fact it had that stumble during the recession.
Yeah.
But I say we have great problems right now. We have great problems here.
Well, thanks for joining me to talk about them.
Welcome.
I appreciate it as always. Rob Vogt, real estate analyst at Vogt Strategic Insights. Thank you for joining us.
You're welcome, Ann. Thank you.
And also Todd Helpbringer, president of Helpbringer Mortgage Services. Thanks as always.
Thank you very much.
We are broadcasting live. It's a special broadcast from the Memorial Golf Tournament at the Muirfield Village Golf Club in Dublin. You're listening. Thanks for listening today. Appreciate your time. Thanks to the Allside staff, producer Michael DeBonis, associate producer Amy Jurevich, assistant producer Shyla Knott, Allside's interns Summer Cartwright, Vaughn Hunt, and Sydney Schaefer, with video production by Rich Karsmitsky and Amber Karsmitsky. Radio operations director Kevin Petrilla, senior broadcast technician Eric French. Alan DeCenzo is the composer of our theme music. Thanks again for listening. This is Allside with Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.